This is Nightline.
Tonight, lesson learned. One of country music's biggest stars hits like whiskey glasses.
I'ma need some whiskey glasses.
Morgan Wallen trying to explain his use of a race slur.
I think I was just ignorant about it.
But his response raising larger questions.
Do you believe there is a race problem in country music overall?
I mean, it would seem that way, yeah.
Plus, diverse experiment. The camp bringing together people of all races.
We should be the ones leading the charge when it comes to loving and tearing down the wall of racism.
Good evening, thank you for joining us. Country star Morgan Wallen discovered the hard way that when you're famous, there's always a camera around, even when you use a racist slur. But now Wallen tells ABC's Michael Strahan he realizes his words matter.
There are going to be a lot of people who are going to watch this interview and say he's only sitting down because he wants to clean up his image. It's all a performance. So what do you say to that?
I understand that, you know. I understand that I'm not ever going to make, you know, everyone happy. I can only come tell my truth, and that's all I know to do.
In many ways, Morgan Wallen embodies country music.
I'ma need some whiskey glasses.
The Tennessee native rose to the top of the charts in 2018 with hits like Whiskey Glasses and songs like Seven Summers, a celebration of small town living, good friends, and good times.
That was seven summers ago.
At 28 years old, Wallen is one of the biggest stars in the industry. But earlier this year, all that was called into question when this video obtained by TMZ became public. It showed Wallen and a group of his friends coming home after a night out on the town in Nashville.
Hey, take care of this. Hey, Gracie, take care of this.
A neighbor was recording when Wallen said a racial slur.
When did you realize that what you had done was a big deal?
My manager called me probably 2 hours before the video came out. You know, he's like, are you sitting down? And no one's ever called me and said that before. I think I realized quickly how much my words matter and the weight and influence that I have now.
The fallout was swift. Wallen was suspended from his label, top radio chains pulled his songs, and the Academy of Country Music announced he would no longer be eligible for any awards at their annual ceremony in April.
Did you think your career was over?
You know, I wasn't sure. I thought that there was a possibility that it was over. I had to get out of my house really fast because my house was in the video. I went to one of my friends has a house, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. I got a lot of threats. My family got a lot of threats. Just sitting in that house, you know, trying to figure out what it is I'm supposed to do.
So take me back to that night.
I had some of my, you know, longtime friends in town. You know, we'd kind of just been partying all weekend, and we figured we'd just go hard for the 2 or 3 days that they were there.
How did this happen? Out of nowhere? You just refer to someone with a racial slur?
No, I don't think it was just, it just happened. You know, I was around some of my friends and you know, we stayed dumb stuff together. It was, in our minds, it's playful. You know, I don't know if that sounds ignorant, but that's really where it came from. And it's wrong. And I quickly understood that.
And had there been no video of the incident, we obviously wouldn't be sitting here right now. This is not the first time you said the word. This is the word that you use frequently amongst your friends.
I wouldn't say frequently, not frequently. It was just around this certain group of friends, I would say.
In what way was it used?
You know, it's one of my best friends. We were all clearly drunk, and I was asking his girlfriend to take care of him because he was drunk and he was leaving. I didn't mean it in any derogatory manner at all.
There are a lot of people gonna say, okay, we've been drunk, we never used the word. Even when you're drunk, there are certain things you do and you don't do. What made you think that the word was ever appropriate to use?
I'm not sure. I think I was just ignorant about it. I don't think I sat down and was like, hey, is this right or is this wrong?
And do you know the history of the word?
Oh, yeah. I've heard some stories in the initial conversations that I had after that, just how some people are, you know, treated even still today. And I'm just like, I haven't seen that with my eyes, that pain or that insignificant feeling or whatever it is that it makes you feel.
That goes back to slavery used by white people to dehumanize black people and make them feel less than. It's also, I think if you dig deeper, a word that a lot of black people heard before they were terrorized, beaten, or even possibly killed. So it's a word that really, I've been called it, makes you mad, makes you angry, doesn't make you feel good at all. So do you understand why it makes black people so upset?
I don't know how to put myself in their shoes because I'm not, you know. But I do understand, especially when I say that I'm using it playfully or whatever, ignorantly. I understand that that must sound, you know, like he doesn't understand.
More than a week after Wallen was caught on camera using a racial slur, he posted this video apologizing and asking his fans not to defend his actions.
I also accepted some invitations from some amazing black organizations, some executives and leaders to engage in some very real and honest conversations.
BMAC is one of the first organizations that I spoke with, the Black Music Action Coalition. I spoke with Kevin Lyles, I spoke with Eric Hutcherson, with B.B. Winans is another one that I spoke with.
Morgan Wallen got his start on The Voice in 2014. And as his fame grew, so did his bad boy persona. In May 2020, he was arrested for public intoxication and disorderly conduct after being kicked out of Kid Rock's bar in Tennessee and arguing outside when bouncers asked him to leave. But for some, what was caught on tape crossed a line. This incident highlighted racial disparities within the industry.
Land of the free, you should try to be black like me.
Mickey Guyton is the first black female country singer to be nominated for a Grammy for her song, Black Like Me. At the time, she tweeted, "When I read comments saying that this is not who we are, I laugh because this is exactly who country music is. I question on a daily basis as to why I continue to fight to be in an industry that seems to hate me so much."
Can we get to the point now where we are also uncovering or working to undo the culture that supports an artist? Like, how do we even get an artist in this space who is essentially on top of the world and still talks like this? How do we get that? Why does he feel comfortable here doing that?
In the 9 days following the release of the video, downloads of Wallen's album skyrocketed by 500%. Dangerous is one of the most popular albums in the U.S. this year.
My team noticed that whenever this whole incident happened, that there was a spike in my sales. So we tried to calculate what the number of how much it actually spiked, you know, from this incident. And we got to a number somewhere around $500,000. And we decided to donate that money to some organizations, BMAC being the first one.
ABC News reached out to BMAC, but has not heard back.
Do you believe there is a race problem in country music overall?
I mean, it would seem that way. Yeah, you know, I haven't really sat and thought about that. But yeah, I mean, I think that if you're talented and you have good music, and you perform well, and you do, you know, you have a product, then it shouldn't matter if what color you are.
You posted a letter. And in the letter, you said you were taking a couple of months away, and you were proud of the work that you put in. So can you describe or tell us some of the work that you put in?
I went and checked myself into rehab. And for 30 days, I spent some time out in San Diego, California, you know, just trying to figure it out. Why am I acting this way? Do I have an alcohol problem? Do I have a deeper issue?
What made you want to sit down, Ed, and talk about this?
I've told a lot of people sorry to their face. But I kind of just wanted to come tell my story and let people know, you know, kind of who I am and how much I regret the mistake I made.
For a star who had fans hanging on every note, this has been a reminder of the power of words.
What do you want to say to anyone who heard you say this word, especially someone with your influence?
You know, I said this word out of ignorance. Because I said it, it doesn't mean that I think you should follow my lead by any means. I hope that all my fans know that that's not in my heart, and that's not something that I condone or that I think that they should be doing either.
Our thanks to Michael. Up next, the unique effort to heal the racial divide.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
One unique summer camp is bringing together families of different races, hoping to bridge understanding and acceptance in a divided nation. This radical idea, anchored in faith.
Here in southern Kentucky, where heaven meets the hillside, there's horseback riding, boating, even the blind. But these activities are simply appetizers to the real entree. Some have called a radical experiment that's been going on in these mountains almost 20 years.
We are very focused on diversity.
Barefoot Republic's a place with an audacious idea that racial reconciliation can happen at summer camp. The process is simple. Bring kids and families together from different backgrounds, different races, different ethnicities, in hopes of fostering life-changing relationships. Tommy Rhodes is Barefoot Republic's founder.
Being barefoot is really a spiritual posture, and if all you can see is somebody's feet, you know, you don't know if they're a prince or a pauper.
The camp is a reflection of Tommy's own life experience.
And so I grew up in a Japanese-American family in a small town in Alabama where it was all black and white, and I just felt like I didn't really fit in, and I experienced just a lot of racism, a lot of prejudice. I didn't know how God was going to utilize my story, and just all those experiences he gave me, you know, have kind of applied to this mission today.
The camp is also unabashedly Christian. Tommy says their camp tries to reflect what they believe heaven will eventually look like.
Barefoot's mission, you know, is certainly Christ-centered, and we're very upfront about that. But we're also very upfront about inviting others into it. We feel like the gospel is reconciliation. And so this whole idea of bringing people together from different backgrounds, we feel like that's what Jesus modeled for us.
Last August, amid the pandemic, the Sabre family joined nine other families for a weekend at Barefoot, a much smaller version of the usual camp.
I am excited to come to Barefoot.
Kayvon is of Persian descent. His wife Annie was born in Taiwan, and they have three little girls. Diversity is woven into their life.
We live in a neighborhood that's predominantly Caucasian, and so when I look at my daughters, to the classroom yearbook photo, for example, and see that every other child is fully Caucasian, I think, wow, my daughter's missing out.
I think there's something really powerful about being taken out of your normal and coming together and meeting someone and hearing their stories.
I have a lot of people that come alongside me and just say, Tommy, I'm so excited about your mission. You know, I've always taught my kids to be colorblind. I just like have this pit in my stomach when I hear that. And I'm just thinking, wow, you know, God created us to see color. God actually created the color, you know, and for us not to see and acknowledge our differences, you know, we're missing out on so much of creation. The opportunity we have at Barefoot is to come together and not be colorblind, but just to acknowledge how beautiful this world is that God has given us.
Thomas Rose is Barefoot's Director of Community Relations. He sees this moment as an inflection point.
What's happening right now when we look at George Floyd and incidences like that, you know, Ahmaud Arbery, it breaks my heart
that happened first and foremost. I'm glad that we're looking at these situations now the way that we are, because for the first time ever, I believe that everybody's eyes have been open to see that there is an issue. There still is a racial issue in this country.
He says that for too long, churches across America have shrunk away from issues of race.
If we believe what the Bible says, if we believe who Jesus was, then we should be the ones leading the charge when it comes to loving and tearing down the wall of racism. But I feel like we aren't the ones. I feel like we kind of always follow in later. We have to wake up.
When Barefoot started in 2002, I mean, one of our biggest challenges was attracting campers that were affluent and that were white. There was a lot of fear associated with sending your kids, you know, to a place where they were gonna be in the minority. And we feel like it's just kind of turning the tables upside down a little bit.
It's been great to get to know other families that kind of focus on the same thing that I do.
The Dem Schroeder family have been coming to Barefoot for years. For 14-year-old Molly, a camp regular, this moment in the country has been eye-opening.
So I didn't really recognize that there was a problem until people kind of started speaking out about it. And it's really kind of changed my perspective on what a lot of people go through that I don't see and I don't understand, because I have the privilege of not having to go through all that stuff.
It's heightened our awareness. We could do more. We could do better. It's more than just I'm going to accept you. It's, no, I need you, right? I need your perspective to make me better, and vice versa.
For campers, it teaches them that people that may not look like them can actually be really good lifelong friends.
It's campers turned counselors like Megan Davis, who first came to the camp in 2006.
I'm struck when you talk about Barefoot, you clutch your chest as if you're talking about a relative.
Yes, it's very dear to my heart.
She attended Barefoot for 6 years.
So I think what I liked about Barefoot, what I remember from being a camper, is that you're not the majority in the room, right?
She's then carried her experience as a camp counselor into her career. Megan now works at a juvenile hall in Orange County, California, with kids who are incarcerated.
How did your experience at Barefoot Camp influence the woman you would become?
I've always loved working with kids. Barefoot kind of prepared me to know that, like, there's a spectrum of trauma that people experience. There's a spectrum of normalcy that people experience. But there's also always opportunities just to be really present with people and to love them. But when you're actually, like, showing up and consistent and there for them, it can change their life.
How relevant do you think Barefoot Camp is, can be, will be in this current climate in America, where we're in the midst of this, what many are calling this racial reckoning?
From, like, being at Barefoot, that I have friends that are of other backgrounds, it helps me understand, like, one, the complexity of everything, but also, how do I think about the issues? How do I advocate for people who do not look like me? How do I actually make a difference instead of being someone who's talking about making a difference?
For the families here, this camp can be a model. Society where all faces and all faiths can feel at home.
When I think about a just society, I think about the design for humanity, the design for life, the heaven that many of us look forward to. And I think it's going to look like Barefoot. You're going to have at the same table black and brown and white and really every sort of color under the sun gathering around the table for love.
Finally tonight, the much-anticipated and controversial 2020 Tokyo Olympics is now underway. The opening ceremony was far from traditional. The theme of the ceremony was moving forward. Performances included kabuki and a tap dance on plywood, Japanese-American tennis star Naomi Osaka lighting the Olympic cauldron. Missing were the crowds and many of the athletes, USA Gymnastics team members holding their own opening ceremony, and naturally, fireworks celebrating an Olympics like no other. Good luck to all the athletes. That's Nightline for this evening. Catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here, same time next week. Thanks for the company, America. Good night. Have a good weekend.